This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
This is the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard. Between 2 and 3 o'clock coming up over the next hour, we'll be looking back at the last couple of nights of Championship action. 6 games on Tuesday night, 6 games on Wednesday night. So plenty to be covering in the Championship over the next hour. Coming up over the next 60 minutes, we'll be talking about Reading. Has the bounce under Mark Bowen come to some sort of an end? They're away at Stoke on Saturday afternoon. We'll be talking about Derby. They had a draw. Their home form has been very different to their away form. Could Joe Hart be joining Wayne Rooney at Derby in January? We'll also be talking about Hull. Is there too much of a reliance upon superstar Jarrod Bowen, and can they keep hold of him in the upcoming January transfer window? We'll also be talking about Birmingham. Pep Clotet had to wait a long time to be made the permanent manager at Birmingham. Where is their season going? Because it feels like they're just drifting at the moment. So where can they end up this season? Remember, if you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp. This is the Championship Fan Show here on Love Sport. So, plenty to talk about over the next hour. That number again, 0208 7020 558. We want to hear from you this afternoon. Obviously, the Championship Fan Show every weekday afternoon between 2 and 3 o'clock, dedicated to fans of all 24 Championship clubs out there. So we want to make sure we hear from you this afternoon. Plenty to go through over the next hour. So, obviously, we had 6 fixtures on Tuesday night. 6 more happened last night. Let's just go through the results in the Championship. At Barnsley, it finished Barnsley 1, Reading 1. So the points shared there at Oakwell. It doesn't really help Barnsley out. Gerhard Struber still recently taken over there. But does that draw really help them? It probably does not. Birmingham 0, QPR 2. A good result for Mark Warburton's side away from home at St Andrews. At Griffin Park, Brentford 2, Cardiff 1. Ollie Watkins continuing his impressive start to the season. Derby 1, Sheffield Wednesday 1. The points shared between Philip Cocu and Gary Monk's sides. Derby's home form has been very different to their away form. It's been Jekyll and Hyde, really. Really poor on the road. Very strong at home. But the points shared at Pride Park. The points also shared at the Liberty Stadium. Swansea against Blackburn. These sides were right next to each other in the table. And the same number of points, just one place apart. And it remained all square. One all between those sides. And it was also one all between Wigan and West Brom. West Brom quite fortunate to get a point in the end. Charlie Austin scored in what was a very, very weird circumstance where the ball was played back to the Wigan goalkeeper, who was having a drink of water, realised very, very late on that the ball was coming his way, went and picked up the ball. It was then an indirect free kick inside the penalty area, and Charlie Austin blasted it home. So West Brom may be a little bit lucky to get a point, and they don't go back to the top. They're behind Leeds on goal difference. So those are all of the results. Leeds are top on 46. West Brom also on the same number of points. Fulham, Bristol City, Nottingham Forest and Preston in the playoff positions. Down in the relegation zone. Barnsley bottom on 13 points. 7 points away from safety now. Wigan and Stoke on 17 points. Luton just outside the relegation zone on 20 points. One of the sides in action was away at the bottom club, Barnsley. They were Reading. It will finish 1-1 at Oakwell. To talk all things Royals now, I'm delighted to say we are joined by Matt Joy, Reading FC reporter for the Reading Chronicle. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Matt. As I mentioned, it was a 1-1 draw in the end at Oakwell. What will Mark Bowen take from this game? What do you think? If away games are never easy in the Championship, but going to the league's bottom side, this was an opportunity to get 3 points, or will it be reasonably content with a point?
I think he won't be content with it. I mean, he was targeting wins from 5 successive matches starting on Saturday against Birmingham City. Obviously didn't get that. Fell to a defeat and, again, didn't win last night. Really poor performance in 2 from Reading. I think if anyone, it was Barnsley who deserved the win. especially in the first half. I think Burnley dominated for long periods, and that's not really what Mark Bowen will be after, especially, as you said, going to bottom of the league, looking to pick up points and climb up the table. That's far from an ideal result for him.
Obviously, looking at the team that played and some of the players in it, let's start off with Lucas Joao, who scored yesterday. He scored in the second half as an equaliser with just under 15 minutes to go. It seems like in the last few games, George Puskas scored that ridiculous five-minute hat-trick, I think it was, a few games ago. Do Reading need those types of players, the likes of Lucas Joao, George Puskas, maybe that's of Ovie Ejaria as well, to step up a bit more, to produce more goals and assists than they are doing at the moment?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, Reading have, Ejaria returned yesterday, but he's been out for a few matches. John Swift as well, one of the league's bright sparks at the start of the season, out injured. So we've lost a lot of creativity in the middle of the park. But Ejaria returned last night. I actually didn't think he had the best game in a Reading shirt. I'm a massive fan of Ovie Ejaria. I think he's brilliant. I think what he can do on the ball, we don't have any other players like him. But he just seemed to be forcing the issue a little bit too much for me yesterday. Tried to do too much at times. Yes, Puskas and Joao probably will be hoping to add more goals in the coming weeks. I think Reading, the main issue with Reading at the moment is the lack of support from the midfield players. I think last night, again, we saw the midfield being bypassed far too often for me, just playing it long to the feet of Joao, who then looked to get the overlapping fullbacks in. But yeah, I think they were feeding off scraps for much of yesterday and for much of the defeat against Saturday, even with two goals. And forwards were feeding on scraps. So Mark Bowen, I think, as much as he'll want goals, more goals from his forward players, he definitely want more support from the midfield. Because they do start these chipping in. I mean, it's all well and good, you know, producing performances that are pleasing on the eye, which Ejaria does often, but he does need to turn those performances into assists and goals.
After the game yesterday, Mark Bowen said that there was a desire to fight back and take something, that the team showed resilience, but he did, to an extent, bemoan the fact that things seem to be going against his club in regards to injuries. Now, I know Andy Yardham has been ruled out the defender until the new year, but as a fan, do you think that will wash with the manager, that the fans will completely agree and go, yeah, we're kind of being hard done by, we've got a few injuries, it's difficult in the Championship when you've got injuries? Or will the fans be looking and thinking, well, there's still a decent side that's being put out there, surely results should still be coming, especially away at Barnsley?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there. I think it does go by a game-by-game basis. So, I mean, against Leeds United at home, obviously one of the high-flying teams in the league, Reading did really, really well. And that was without, you know, that was without Yeard on that day, who was out with a suspension, without Swift, without Ejaria. Performed really admirably, and there wasn't much criticism from supporters of sort of Bowen's tactics after that one, because, you know, it was... We nearly held on for a point against one of the team's top teams. Oh, sorry, against one of the league's top teams. But in games like Barnsley, if Mark Bowen is, you know, being realistic, that's not an excuse he can use, because, you know, we with the quality that is running throughout that team, even without certain players, we should be looking to pick up results, especially against Barnsley. I mean, I think, did Mark Bowen make a rod for his own back a little bit by saying he wanted 5 out of 5? Arguably, yes. But, you know, when you're replacing Andy Yeardon, for example, with Chris Gunter, I mean, Chris Gunter isn't particularly... he has an interesting relationship with some Reading fans, you know, some applaud him for being a loyal servant, others think that he should have left it a few years back. But, you know, you're replacing quality with proven quality, and that shouldn't really be an excuse. I think it's not helped, and I think the downturn in form has coincided with losing Ejaria and Swift, but... As the weeks go on, if the results still don't come, then that excuse will start to wear thin. And given the nature of how Bowen obviously took over the role in a controversial manner, I think he may be afforded a little less time than other managers would be in this situation.
When you look at the form table, Matt, for Reading, in the last 5 games, there have been 3 losses, 1 win and 1 draw. Do you think, and we've seen this with a few clubs, actually, we've seen it with Huddersfield in particular, that there may be that bounce has come to an end. That obviously when you change a manager, usually what we see is that instant change where suddenly results do turn around and suddenly fans start questioning players and saying, why didn't you try as hard for this manager as you did the last manager? Mm. Do you think it's as simple as to say that that bounce has ended, or is it much more complicated than that? And it's not just as simple as saying just because the results have started to change over the last few games, that's because that they've run out of steam after that original honeymoon period, I suppose?
Well, I think you can look at it both ways. I mean, you can say, yeah, as I said, that the form dip has coincided with certain injuries. That's obviously not helped. But if you look at the sort of the manner of the performances, I think that there is definitely an argument that Reading have lost that sort of new manager bounce. I mean, if you look at the performance against Luton Town, which I believe was his fourth or fifth game in charge, I can't remember off the top of my head, but that was a brilliant performance from Reading. You know, dominated the game from the get-go. Whereas you look at the game against Barnsley, in a similar position in the league, the performance was nowhere near that level. I mean, it was really, really poor at times. And in that last run of five games you mentioned, the Wigan victory, although Pushkas's hat-trick was unbelievable, for 70 minutes of the game, Reading didn't deserve to get anything out of it. So were they lucky to get that win? Perhaps. Something is not quite working at the moment. And I think what would be concerning Bowen quite a lot is actually the defensive side of it. I mean, in Liam Moore, Matt Miazga and Michael Morrison, you've got three centre-backs who have been, for Reading in their careers, you know, very sort of reliable. They've been a safe pair of hands, so to speak. Morrison conceded an own goal on Saturday. It was unfortunate, but then gave the ball away in comical fashion last night for Barnes' goal. So I think that the issue isn't just, you know, the lack of goals, perhaps the lack of assists from certain midfield players. I think there is an issue at the back as well. So Mark Bowen will need to get things changed quickly with obviously so many games coming up. And I do think that saying, I'll go back to it, I think that when he said that he wanted five consecutive wins, I think that in hindsight he wouldn't have said that, because I think it has ramped the pressure up on his side. And there are a lot of Reading fans who, as I said, will be sort of waiting for him to fail, given the nature of his appointment, given the popularity of the former coach. So I think there is a case of the losing the bounce. There is also a case to add in the sort of factors that haven't helped that. But certainly things don't look as bright as they did this time a month ago, shall we say.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Matt. That was Matt Joy, Reading FC reporter for the Reading Chronicle. Yeah, a bit of frustration, I think, for Mark Bowen's side that they couldn't get more than a point at Barnsley, who have only won two games all season and they're bottom of the table. They are away at Stoke on Saturday afternoon. That's Reading's next game. Remember, if you want to get in contact with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp, and some exciting news to bring you is that we are going national from Monday, so you can listen to us on your digital radio no matter where you are in the UK. So when you follow your team up and down the country, you'll be able to listen to Love Sport the whole journey. So that's obviously from this Monday, you'll be able to get Love Sport across the UK on national digital radio. We'll be back after this.
Love Sport.
Welcome back to the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 3 o'clock this afternoon. Another side in action last night were Derby, and to talk all things Rams, I'm delighted to say we are joined by Richard Cusack, Midlands football writer for Reach. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Richard. So it ended 1-1 at home against Sheffield Wednesday last night. Chris Martin's late penalty rescued a point for Cocu's side. Considering that Sheffield Wednesday are a good side, they could have even gone up to third last night. Will Derby fans be looking and thinking it's not a bad point at home, or will they be thinking, considering how good their home form has been so far this season, that it may have been an opportunity missed for all three?
100% is a good point. Derby were very poor in the first half. Sheffield Wednesday had the measure of Derby completely. They Jordan Rhodes and Stephen Fletcher up front bullied Derby's centre-halves. Obviously, they forced Craig Forsyth into that horrendous misplaced pass for the first goal that Stephen Fletcher scored. Gary Monk had set his team up a way to try and get all 3 points. They hassled Derby. They harangued them. They were too strong, too physical. A lot of long balls into the up to the strikers. They bullied Derby's centre backs. They were just stronger, quicker. They looked fitter as well. Derby looked very poor in the first half, but something just seemed to click. In the second half, I think Philip Cocu must have put a the proverbial rocket up a few backsides in the changing room at half time, and Derby came out and they looked a much better outfit. And I think in the end, with Sheffield Wednesday going down to 10 men and the 5 minutes of added on time, Derby really pushed to try and get a win. Obviously, after Chris Martin equalised in the penalty spot 8 minutes from time, the play at Pride Park seemed to... it was a completely different game. It was a very bizarre game, actually, to be honest with you, given the way the pendulum swung from Sheffield Wednesday into Derby's favour for the last 10-15 minutes or so.
I mentioned there, Richard, about the Jekyll and Hyde nature of Derby's form so far this season, that at home, and it was another point yesterday, Derby have been very, very good and on the whole been very strong. Away from home, it's been the complete opposite. Now, obviously, in any sport, we talk about how playing at home is always that advantage and making your home ground a fortress is important. Why is it that we are seeing such a stark contrast? It's not like Derby's home form is slightly better, which we would probably expect for a club side to be better at home than it is away. Why is there such an antithesis between home and away form?
Derby aren't even Jekyll and Hyde anymore, Kieran. They obviously had gone on that, what is it now, 4 or 5 game run between home and away, where they'd lose a game away from home and they'd win the next game at Pride Park. They've not won the last couple of matches at home now. They obviously drew 1-1 last night and drew against QPR the previous game at Pride Park towards the end of last month. I think Philip Cocu openly admitted after the QPR game that he was sort of worried about how QPR had set up, and I think he went with 5 at the back there, and he went for a similar formation at Blackburn and went back to a 4 at the back and a 4-4-2 diamond with 2 strikers that had served Derby very well in good wins against the likes of Middlesbrough and Preston in November. Derby were excellent in that. Their last win now was on the 23rd of November against Preston, where they offered a similar sort of challenge which Sheffield Wednesday provided, i.e. A very strong physical side who were in form. Obviously, we know Preston are doing well this season, and Derby looked very much up to the task. I think the worrying thing for fans and me certainly, and obviously playing staff, managing staff as well, is that the players don't seem to be putting the performances in. Now, I don't like questioning the desire of players. I'd never say they don't play for the shirt, but I just think there seems to be a little bit of a disconnect between the manager and the players, perhaps, in exactly how the players are expected to play by the manager. And I think that might be an answer as to why the performance has looked so disjointed, particularly at home the last couple of matches. I think the players, Saturday Blackburn was another, it was abject really, the 1-0 defeat to Blackburn. They just don't look a cohesive unit at all. And there's mitigating factors to that, certainly in terms of injuries and the fact that you've got Cocu, who is only 21 games into his managerial career at Derby, but you'd think all that time on the training ground and the matches as well, you think it might. The message doesn't seem to be, it seems to have got home to the players yet, and that's concerning.
Obviously, it's been a well-known fact that Wayne Rooney obviously has joined Derby. He can't play on the field until the beginning of January, but he's been in the dugout. Has there been any talk of any notable difference that Wayne Rooney has made in a coaching capacity? Because that's the interesting aspect of this, because even though Wayne Rooney's not the player he was 5 or 6 years ago, you'd still think at this level he'd still have an impact on the field. But I think it's the coach aspect of the player coach role that he's taking on that I think a lot of people are very interested in. He has been in the dugout the last few weeks. Has there been any discussion of what he may have added, what he's like as a coach to Philip Cocu at the moment?
We've not really sort of had chance to. I mean, they're not the sort of questions you'd ask after the performances and games we've seen. I think with Wayne, it's very much he's come in the playing capacity. I think he's training with the lads as opposed to coaching. Obviously, he'll be offering hints and tips to the players at more form on a daily basis. But in terms of Wayne, I think he's very much here as a player first. So he's training with the lads and he's getting involved. I think in terms of the obviously, you look at Philip Cocu's backroom staff. You've got Liam Rosinia there as well, well-known Sky pundit, former Brighton coach, of course, and a very good playing career. Twan Sheepers and Chris van der Weerden, who have been with Cocu at PSV and Fenerbahce, respectively. So that's kind of how his coaching staff looks like. I think with regards to Rooney, he doesn't strike me as a sort of player. He looked very sheepish when he was introduced against QPR. I don't think he'll be the sort of player coach will go in there all guns blazing and say, perhaps you ought to do this, this, this and this. I think you'll see his influence over a gradual period of time when he's had a chance to bed in and settle in at the club. And I think, you know, we've got four games now until Rooney can make his debut against Barnsley. I don't think Wayne Rooney is going to be the messiah, so to speak. I don't think he's going to be the one saviour to Derby's sort of issues, because they aren't playing well enough to... They don't get the ball to the strikers, and Rooney will be completely isolated if he does play up front. And I think Derby's biggest problem is that whoever plays up front for them, they don't see enough of the ball. So they've got to rectify that issue before we can start hoping that Wayne Rooney will be banging in the goals and get them out of this situation they find themselves in.
Obviously, we're now in that period in the middle of December where everyone's automatically starting to talk about the January transfer window. Now, Derby have been linked with a number of goalkeepers and a number of well-known ones, Asmir Begovic, even Joe Hart. And can you imagine if both Joe Hart and Wayne Rooney were both playing at Derby in the second half of this season? Now, Derby have said that they're not in for a goalkeeper in January. Do you think that that is going to be the case? If so, what might Derby be looking for? Obviously, Wayne Rooney is going to be a new signing in January. Which areas might they be looking to strengthen? And do you think Philip Cocu will be given sufficient funds to reinforce in the window?
I don't think the goalkeeper's an issue. I don't think Ben Hamer's looked very well, very good, to be fair, since he's come in when he replaced Keller Roos. I think it was at home to QPR, was his first game back in the last month. I think Derby really could. An interesting one, they were linked with a player called Ferdi Kalioglu, who plays for Fenerbahce, obviously. Philip Cocu was at Fenerbahce last season for a little bit. He obviously knows him from there. He's a midfielder. With Graeme Shinney and Christian Bielik out, two of Derby's key players, and Matt Clark, also injured, a good defender on loan from Brighton. Derby could do, and obviously Richard Keogh, not with the club anymore. Derby certainly need a central defender. They're playing Craig Forsyth there at the moment, a left-back who's only just returned from his third, can you believe it, anterior cruciate ligament injury. He looked good when he played there the first couple of times, but last night he obviously made that horrendous error to gift Wednesday the opening goal. They'll want a centre-back. They could do maybe another attacking midfielder, because Tom Lawrence at the moment isn't doing enough to carry him in the team. I think Derby will be looking at a couple of good midfielders, maybe another attacker and a defender. I think obviously there's the investment deal with Henry Gabay, the Swiss-Turkish businessman who runs Duet Group, a conglomerate based in the city of London. I think he'll be calling a few shots as with regards to what money that Cocu has to spend in January when he comes on board, when that investment deal gets finalised. I think Derby desperately need this transfer window now, but as we all know, January is a notoriously hard market because clubs they don't want to let players go. It's a really hard one to navigate. I think Derby just need to get a few players out and get a few players in, because at the moment the players they've got simply aren't good enough. And they just need some fresh blood, some fresh impetus from somewhere.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Richard. That was Richard Cusack, Midlands football writer for Reach, talking about Wayne Rooney there. Obviously, he's in a coaching capacity at the moment, but obviously from the beginning of January, we'll be able to play. They are up against Millwall at home this Saturday. Derby have been Jekyll and Hyde so far, but according to Richard there, they're not even Jekyll and Hyde at home, because they're not winning games at home now, so their form is pretty poor, no matter whether it's on home soil or away from home. Remember, if you want to get in contact with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp, and obviously we've got some exciting news for you here at Love Sport, and is that we are going national from Monday. You'll be able to listen to us on digital radio across the UK, wherever you're going, whichever journey you are taking, whether you're right up in the north or in the south of the country. You can listen to us on digital radio. Plus, we've got a number of new fan shows coming your way very, very soon. So make sure you stay tuned for that, and make sure you spread the word. As I said, we're going national on digital radio from Monday. Obviously, later in the hour, we'll be talking a bit about Birmingham, who lost at home last night. Where is their season heading? Is it at risk? risk of drifting, or could they even drift towards a relegation battle? But up next, we'll be talking all things Hull.
This is Love Sport.
Welcome back to the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 3 o'clock this afternoon. Let's just run down all of the results from last night. Barnsley 1, Reading 1, Birmingham 0, QPR 2, Brentford 2, Cardiff 1, Derby 1, Sheffield Wednesday 1, Swansea 1, Blackburn 1. I think you can see where this is going. Wigan 1, West Brom 1. So a lot of the teams liking a 1-1 draw last night. On Tuesday night, for Hull, they lost away at Leeds by 2-0. To talk all things Hull now, I'm delighted to say, we are joined by Jonty Coleman from the Hull Daily Mail and Hull Live. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Jonty. As I mentioned, a 2-0 defeat for your side away at Leeds on Tuesday night. Two relatively late goals for Leeds. Do you look back at this and think, honestly, away at Elland Road with the form that Leeds are in, that's not going to determine Hull's season? Or are you thinking maybe there was an opportunity of getting something from that game?
I think both are definitely very valid arguments. And so I think it was the 73rd minute the first goal went in, and it was an incredibly unfortunate own goal from Jordy Device, who, you know, had another really good performance on Tuesday night. It was a miscue clearance, having made so many. And it was one of those just wrong-footed his own keeper. And the game really opened up from there. Within 10 minutes later, Tom Eves had a great header from a corner. It was one of his best performances in the whole City shirt so far. He had a header from a corner, which was saved, cleared off the line. Leeds go down the other end and score on the counter. And it's these fine margins that really sum up the Championship. On hindsight of the performance as a whole, I feel that Hull City will be a little bit disappointed to have not taken something, because they played really well. You know, they defended Leeds, and, you know, not many teams can do that. And like I said, it was those two moments ultimately define the game. And they've shown that against Leeds. They showed it against West Brom when they lost 1-0 about a month or so ago. Similar, where they lost 1-0, but again. And both managers, both Marcelo Bielsa and Slaven Bilic, both told Hull City head coach Grant McCann that they were very impressed by him and one of the best sides they've both come up against this season. And in fairness to McCann, he said, you know, he'd rather have taken points, you know, than sort of approval of his peers, if you like. You know, he's very determined. You know, he's an ambitious manager, and he won't feel as if, yes, he would have taken a lot of positives from those performances, for example, but at the same time, he'd have been disappointed that, you know, he hasn't got any points from either of those games.
You mentioned it there, Jonty, about fine margins. Leeds were 1-0 up going into the final 10 minutes, and Hull thought they'd scored, and a phenomenal save by Kiko Kassia. And then within 20 seconds, not even that, the transition from Leeds from defence into attack, they were right down the other end and had scored. That shows that even in the Championship, even against a side like Leeds, it is so close that Hull there could have scored and got a point from the game. But then within seconds, that they find themselves 2-0 down. So that's something that Grant McCann's side are going to have to learn, that in this league you can be punished for just a slight switch off in concentration, just small little errors that can be the difference between taking a point from a game or losing it.
I think that's a fair argument. You know, fine margins, especially in the Championship, you know, it comes up so often. In fairness, I think that 2-0 is definitely not a fair reflection on the game. Leeds would, you know, probably deserve winners, but, you know, it wouldn't have been completely out of the question to have seen Hull City take a point from that game. As you mentioned, Eves' header was a really good one, forced a cracking save out. I could see everyone thought it had gone in. We were sat on the gantry, we were sat at that end of the pitch, and, you know, it looked so close. And within, I think it was 17 seconds by the time that Ezgan Alioski made it 2-0. So it is very much fine margins. But in fairness, I think at that position, when you are 1-0 down away at a very informed lead, you just have to go for it. And, you know, Grant McCann won't be disappointed that he's lost 2-0, because you'd rather go for it at 1-0 and the chance of going for a point, rather than just sitting back and taking a 1-0, because it looks a little bit more respectable. In fairness, you know, it's one of those games that, you know, it was a 2-0 loss, but at the same time, you can't really fault their efforts. And I think there was only four shots on target in the whole game, two apiece, and, you know, one of those was a goal for Leeds. So, you know, that kind of sums up the game that it was. It was attacking from both sides, especially the hosts. But yeah, just taking chances.
Obviously, whenever we have a chat, Jonty, it's an absolute definite that a certain Jarrod Bowen will pop up in the conversation. And yet again, he does. He scored 15 goals. It really is phenomenal that at this stage of the season, just before the halfway mark, that he's already up there. He's up there with the top goal scorers in the Championship. I think it's only Alexander Mitrovic that's ahead of him at the moment. Is it one of those kind of weird situations for Hull fans in that obviously you want your players to do well and you want them to perform on a consistent basis because that will benefit the club, but there's a massive risk that we were discussing about potentially in the summer him going, but is there a genuine possibility that clubs will be looking at the phenomenal form that Bowen's in and think, actually, let's move forward that move. We might not get the chance to sign him in the summer because someone else might come in ahead of us. They might come in January and try and sign him.
There's a lot of, you know, different factors in this one, I think. And as you rightly said earlier, I don't think I've ever spoke to you without Jarrod Bowen coming into conversation. So firstly, I think that his form is fantastic. He's already, bear in mind, what you have to consider is this is only his third full season of senior football. Well, 2.5 seasons, really, if you think about it. His first season, he got 15 in all competitions. His second, he got 22. And he's already on 15 now. It's not even Christmas. And, you know, all that runs to one. He's not even a striker. That's the baffling thing about it. And he's been fantastic for Hull City. And I think if you take sort of his goals out of the team, I think they'd be right down by the relegation zone just because he's been that important to this season. I think there will be a lot of interest in him in January. His current contract ends at the end of the season. However, there is the option to extend it by a further year, which I'm sure Hull City will do regardless of whether he does sign the new 3-year contract he's been offered by the club. I think there will be a lot of Premier League interest in the last few days. You know, loads of Premier League sides have been rumoured, you know, as they often are this time of year. But I think one potential stumbling block might be how much Hull City do want for him if he is going to sell. Hull City's own, I think it was back in the last month, it was pretty recently, came out and said that he wouldn't sell Jarrod Bowen for £20 million. Now, if you looked at players that have left the Championship for more than £20 million, there's a very, very small amount of players, you know, you could probably count them on one hand. But in fairness, you know, in the current market, especially when you saw the likes of the amount of money that Ollie McBurney, Neil Maupai, they left the Division 4 in the summer, it's sort of understandable from there. So I think a number of clubs that are interested in Bowen, yes, there'll be the interest, but at the same time, I think the asking fee could potentially block a number of clubs from a move.
He's obviously up for Player of the Month, which is really no surprise in the Championship. Do you think that he is good enough to play Premier League football? Because from my point of view, looking at it, he has performed at an exceptional level for the last 18 months in, no disrespect to Hull, but a pretty average Championship side. They're not a side that are right up near the top, where he's surrounded by lots of quality players that are potentially good enough to play Premier League football. So do you think that if he were to earn that move, that he kind of is fully capable and would hit the ground running and would suit the Premier League?
I think he's got an eye for goal, which I think a lot of forwards, that is one ability that sticks with a forward, regardless of what level you play at. If you've got a natural goal scoring ability, it can always take you wonders. I think the issue I often find with Championship players leaving it, are they going to get played in the position that they've often thrived in? So, for example, I think if Bowen does move, it has to be at a club where A, he's going to get regular football, and B, at one where he'll get played on the right mid predominantly. That's where he's thrived in these last couple of years. That's where he's made a name for himself. So he needs to fight. If he does leave in January, he needs to make sure it's at a club where he's going to be allowed to do that. One example I like to give is Matteo Vidra. The season after he left Derby County, he had a phenomenal year. I think he'd finished Golden Boot. It was around 20 goals. He played as the number 10 pretty much all season. And that was where Derby got the best out of him. That was where he got to the peak of his form. I think Derby reached the playoffs that year. So he got his move to Burnley, and for a number of reasons, it hasn't worked out for him. But I think one of those being is that he hadn't been played as a 10, and that's largely down to the fact that it's not part of Burnley's, you know, ethos. So I think, you know, and we haven't seen anything of him really since his move to the Premier League. So I think that Bury needs to avoid doing that should he move to the Premier League. I think he's more than capable of playing there. But as is often the case with players in this division, they have to be playing regularly and they have to be playing in the position where, you know, they best operate.
And just finally, Jonty, looking ahead for Hull, their next game, these games come thick and fast. And for Hull this week, that is the case. They're away at Charlton on the Friday night. So tomorrow night, these games are seemingly just coming every other day, really, for them. What do you make? Charlton are in pretty terrible form themselves. Two wins in 15 games since mid-September. Do you look at this and think that there's a decent opportunity for Hull to get some points from this game?
There is. Before the last sort of couple of weeks, Hull City's away form had been really impressive this season. You know, it was something that had kind of earned them quite a lot of their points this year. However, they've lost the last two on the bounce away for the first time this season. Firstly, at Barnsley, who hadn't won in about 3 or 4 months, not since the opening day of the season. And then they had that sort of new manager bounce in Gerhard Struber's first home game. And, you know, it paid dividends for them that Barnsley won 3-1 and Hull City really didn't turn up. Against Leeds, however, you know, there's a reason they're flying high right at the top of the league, and it was always going to be a tough test. And City did perform really well for the vast majority, and it was just when they had to go for it that ultimately they were caught out and through no fault of their own, really. So it's a great opportunity to go and play Charlton away from home. Charlton looked terrific in the first sort of couple of months, but as you said there, the form's been dreadful. I think they've picked up 2 points from a possible 27 in their last 9 games, which is absolutely toxic form, really. They've obviously had a lot of injury troubles that are slowly starting to ease. So on that basis, you know, when you combine form, when you combine the amount of players they've got out injured, it is a really good time to play them. However, you know, a lot of City fans use the phrase typical City, which would be, you know, losing when it seemed easier to win. Barnsley being a prime example of that. And I hope for their sake that doesn't happen tomorrow. And but in fairness, I think it is a really good opportunity to go to Charlton, and a victory should hopefully be in Grant McCann's grass when leaving London on Friday night.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Jonty. That was Jonty Common from the Hull Daily Mail and Hull Live joining us to talk about Hull City there. Jarrod Bowen, he really is a phenomenal player. And as Jonty pointed out there, this isn't a centre-forward. This isn't an Alexander Mitrovic that is a natural striker. And to have scored 15 goals by this point in the season in a side that is in mid-table where he's not surrounded by a whole host of quality players, that is a phenomenal record. I was surprised, very surprised, that no Premier League club really went in for him in the summer. They may have showed some interest, but didn't really pursue him that much, didn't put any concrete offers on the table. I think some clubs will be thinking now, let's not wait until the summer. Let's accelerate. Let's bring forward that interest into January, and Hull might have a job on their hands to keep hold of him. Jonty cited there about how both Ollie McBurney and Neil Morpay made moves to the Premier League last summer, £20-25 million roughly. I think Hull are fully entitled with the money that's in the Premier League and potentially some clubs that are desperate for a player like him in January. I think they're fully entitled to ask for something like that, but it's going to be perhaps a tense few weeks and next month or so for Hull fans to see whether Jarrod Bowen stays. I think in reality, Hull fans are probably resigned to the fact that next season he's no longer going to be there, but it's a case of whether they can keep hold of him for the rest of this season. Remember, if you want to get in touch, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp, so make sure you get in contact with us this afternoon. Up next, we'll be talking all things Birmingham.
Love Sport.
Welcome back to the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 3 o'clock this afternoon. If you want to get in touch, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp, so we want to hear from you this afternoon. We're going to talk about Birmingham now. They lost 2-0 last night against QPR, and I'm delighted to say we are joined by Brian Dick, Birmingham City writer from the Birmingham Live. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Brian. Birmingham obviously losing last night to QPR. We talked about Hull actually just a few moments ago, and they've got Charlton, who are horribly out of form. It felt like QPR were going the same way. How disappointed will Pep Clotet and his team be losing at home and not even being able to score last night?
Yeah, it was a really disappointing evening, especially on the back of the Reading game when they played really well. You know, the scoreline at Reading was only 3-2, but you know, in truth, Birmingham were a lot better than Reading that day, and it felt a little bit like they'd turned a corner. So yeah, and they prided themselves on their home form this season, and last night was you know, there's probably one of only two occasions where you'd say that they really underperformed in front of the home fans. So it was pretty deflating all round, to be honest.
Looking at the comments from Pep Clota after the game, he said, "We could not find the right tempo. The first goal, we should have defended better, and it changed the game." Do you think that it was a case of, from the first whistle, something just wasn't quite right with Birmingham yesterday, and that's why it resulted in a disappointing home defeat?
They were a bit flat from the first whistle, but I do think sort of they worked their way into the game, and they did look by far the more likely side to score in that first half. They got themselves into some very good positions, particularly down the right with Maxime Colin and Jeremy Baylor. They just couldn't find the right quality of delivery. I do think if Birmingham had scored first, it would have been a massively different game. You know, I think QPR would have had to come out because they did come in sit very deep, and they'd have had to go to their plan B. But the goal just before half time virtually was the last kick before half time as well. It was a bad time to concede the goal and a really bad goal to concede as well. So it was a bit of a double whammy in that view. And then once you come out 1-0 down at home, I think QPR have got some very good players in attacking positions, which means if you leave gaps, then they can hit you on the break, which is exactly what happened.
It would have been a bit of an emotional night for some of the older generations at St Andrews. The Birmingham crowd paid tribute with a minute's applause before the game for two former bosses of Birmingham, Jim Smith, who also actually managed QPR, and Ron Saunders, who succeeded him at St Andrews in March 1982, have both sadly passed away in the last week. So just talk to us a little bit about those two and the reception, obviously, that the applause was given in remembering their lives and how big a difference, how big an impact they made at Birmingham Football Club during their lives.
Yeah, there was a lot of affection last night, and you know, some real genuine sadness from former players and supporters over the last few days. We'll sort of take them chronologically in terms of when they were at Blues. Jim Smith was at Birmingham from 78 to 82. The side went down and under him into the old second division, but he brought them straight back up, and he's recruited some really iconic players, like the likes of Frank Worthington and people like that, and backed some good young players, Mark Dennis and Steve Linux and guys like that. So he steered the club through. You know, back from the second tier up into the top flight, and was really well regarded. He was actually succeeded in 82 by Ron Saunders, who had been sacked by Aston Villa just a few months earlier. Now things were starting to crumble a little bit during Saunders' reign, and they went down and then came back up under Saunders as well, just like Jim Smith. But by the time they came back up, the financial situation was deteriorating. And he moved on as well quite quickly to West Brom, sort of a quick tour around the Midlands clubs. But you know, as I said, they're both remembered with a huge amount of affection, and both in their generation, they're both really, really, really well respected and highly thought of football managers. Jim Smith is certainly remembered with a lot of love, actually, because of the personality he was. Ron Saunders was a little bit more aloof. But nevertheless, people have always respected what he did at St Andrews.
Talking of managers, Brian, looking at Birmingham's current boss, Pep Clotet, he, after 6 months as interim boss, he was finally given the full-time head coach position at the beginning of this month. Why do you think it was that they gave, or it took so long for them to give him the position on a permanent basis, rather than having him as an interim for so long? For 6 months is a long time to be an interim, and then finally to be told you are going to be given the job.
Yeah, that's an impossible question to answer. Only the chief executive and the owners know that, and as we know, they don't speak to the media. So I guess they were reluctant to sort of crown Clotet as Gary Monk's successor straight away. Just for whatever reason, I mean, it's been suggested to me that they considered the role of caretaker to literally be taking care of the club, and they liked that idea. Now, you know, I'm not sure how much I buy that theory. But for me, it smacked of keeping options open. And I think, you know, I think Clotet has done enough to earn their trust. You know, he was given a job of engineering a footballing makeover in terms of style, and also implementing that makeover with young and homegrown players. Now he's done and doing both. It's not a complete process yet. And also there's been the pressure for results as well. So you know he's made quite a good degree of headway on the style and the young players. The results can always be improved. And I think the way he's handled himself and particularly with the Gary Monk situation when Monk sort of criticised him so heavily a couple of weeks ago, I think he's just handled himself with dignity and you know that's appealed to the owners. I do think that the removing of the caretaker tag was in the pipeline though before Monk's outburst. So it just seems to have been a growing comfort and recognition of sort of the steady hand that he's brought to the club.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Brian. That was Brian Dick, Birmingham City writer for the Birmingham Live. Wonder where Birmingham season really is going.
This is Love Sport.